What about your watch?
We don't have one.
You have a watch? No, you want to have a watch?
No one
measures me. That's okay, I'll use my phone.
Do you want to have one up there?
That's okay, I'll check.
She has one.
Regina, you have a watch?
Here.
Huh?
Just give it back.
Oh, okay.
I'm Hungarian, but I'm not Romanian.
I just found this.
Huh? Oh, that works. Okay. This one's nicer, though. Okay, Tov, let's start. First of all, I'm a little speechless that everyone came. I honestly didn't. I thought I would walk in and just be... I thought it was just going to be Leia and Ezra and I. I didn't think anyone would make it out. It's absolutely freezing outside. Yes.
The prize is the better
prize
Kavana.
Is Torah knowledge.
extra black and white cookie. All right, so
we tripped to Orlando.
Yeah. All right, so let's try to warm up with some chassidus. So we left off last time in the middle of this piece here from the Alter Rebbe. Was speaking about the idea of trying to put together the idea of the ladder and the idea of journey into self, which we had spoken about in the weeks before, that the ladder up into the higher worlds, you could tell, you could come closer to some chutz l'machna.
Yeah, right.
Here.
Yeah,
that's
right.
Yeah. That the idea of that tefillah is two things we've spoken about in the past. We've spoken about that the Zohar refers to the tefillah as a ladder, which means climbing up into the higher worlds, to more ethereal worlds, higher worlds, Olam HaSel Yoinim. And Kabbalah and Chassidus speak at length about what these higher worlds are, what their levels are known as. And on the other hand, we find that tefillah is a journey into self, coming more in touch with one's own soul, with one's own being, with those aspects of self that we're not usually aware of, that sometimes we're afraid to be aware of, sometimes we're not able to be aware of. And tefillah really, lech lecha, tefillah is the tefillah masmedesh al neshama, the constant prayer of soul, to really be in touch with who we ourselves are. And we spoke last week that these two things seem to be a contradiction. On one hand, we're talking about ascending to higher places, and the other time we're talking about going deeper into self. But we discussed that not only are they not a contradiction, they're really the same thing. Because what does it mean, upper worlds? Upper worlds doesn't mean different places. Upper worlds means different states of awareness, different states and levels of consciousness. We spoke a lot about the idea that people live in different worlds. You could have people that are on the same bench, sitting next to each other on the bus, and they're in different worlds. One is in the business world, one is in the fashion world. You could have people that live on the same roof or in the same room that live in different worlds, which is always scary because people are not geographical beings. We're not pieces of meat. We're primarily souls, and our beings are primarily conscious. And therefore, where we are is not such a function of where we are physically. And therefore, connections that are made physically only are doomed to fail. Because real connections between people is if you're living in the same world. The challenge is to be in a relationship with somebody, not just to be in the same world, but to be together in the same world in the same way. Because that's what people are. Same thing with us and God. And the one that we say, you know, I always say there's a, it's interesting when you have stories from tzaddikim. So we believe that stories from tzaddikim is a very high thing, a very special, a very holy thing, stories from tzaddikim. It's actually, it's said that, you know, Maisa Merkava, the story of the chariot, the divine chariot, which is considered the highest revelation of God. So it's brought down in the Sfarim that Sipurei tzaddikim is like Maisa Merkava. Stories of tzaddikim is like stories of the chariot. When you have tzaddikim, tzidkanias, that live their life in a way of God, that itself is the divine chariot. But I always say that's interesting that when you have like different gears, there's different versions of the same story. Right? It's always how that happens. But sometimes you have different versions that they really complement each other. So there's a famous anecdote they say about the Kotzker, Remendel Kotzker, that when he was a little boy, when he was 3 years old, so they said to Remendel, Mendela, somebody said, I'll give you an apple, which that was like the treat back then, an apple, and not black and white cookies, I guess. Said, Mendel, I'll give you an apple if you tell me where God is. So Mendel said back, I'll give you two apples if you could tell me where God is not. That's one version. There's another version that they said, he said, Mendel, I'll give you an apple if you tell me where God is. So Mendel answered, wherever you let him in. So which is it? What's the answer? Tell me where God is not, meaning he's everywhere. I'll give you two apples, tell me where he's not. Or the answer is wherever you let him in. So both are true, right? On one hand, where is he not? On the other hand, he's only where you let him in. What does that mean? What does that mean? He's everywhere, but he's only where you let him in. Because geographically, he's everywhere. But the question is if you're in the same world as him. That's the question. Are you in the same world as he is? It's very interesting, parenthetically, you know, in the ultimate manifestation, physical manifestation of our relationship with Hashem are the Kruvim. The Kruvim, right? The Kruvim, that represents our relationship of Kal Yisrael and HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's the in the Kodesh Kadoshim, the Holy of Holies, you have the Kruvim. And they were, so to speak, that statue, they were almost a solidifying element that showed what our relationship with God is. And we all know that that's what the Svarim say, that it says in the Gemara, that upneim isha lochiv, they were standing face to face. Or when Hashem wasn't happy with us, they turned back to back. Right? So it's interesting. Significance of face to face or back to back? What does it mean? There's a lot of ways. I mean, you know, you're upset with somebody. What does it mean that the Kruvim turn back to back? Why didn't they, like, just, you know, yell at each other or something? What is it that they turn back to back? You know, yell at each other, you know, throw something at them. I mean, what do you mean back to back? So the obvious explanation is because when you're throwing something at somebody, it means you still love them. Right? Right. Back to back is the worst. Apathy, silence is the worst. Is the worst thing, right? That when you're standing back to back, it means they're b'chal. The person is, you know, you're not at all. That they're not there at all. That's the most difficult. That's the most painful thing, right? When a person hates you, you know that means that there's probably a good chance that a person that loved you once now hates you. There's a chance that the love is still there, right? The opposite of love isn't hate. The opposite of love is apathy. And that's the silent treatment is the worst, right? I also always say to people when they say they're all angry at God. So I say, okay, I have my issues with him too. Just don't give him the silent treatment. Yell at him. Yell at him. Tell him that you're angry at him. Tell him your issues that you have with him, you know? The silent treatment is the worst. Though he's been giving us a lot of that also these past couple of thousand years, but whatever. We won't get into that. But so that's the simple explanation of why the physical manifestation, our relationship with Hashem, is that either face-to-face or back-to-back. But the truth is that there's a deeper explanation that says in Chassidus. Why it's either face-to-face, back-to-back. Not just because the deepest rejection is ignoring somebody. There's a deeper thing. And that is because it mamish shows what we're like with God, this idea of the kotzker. The idea of face-to-face or back-to-back, when you're standing back-to-back with a person, you're geographically right next to the person. And yet, you're so far. Remember Virginia Slims? Remember? What was the slogan? So close yet so far. Right? So close yet so far. Your mom is standing right next to the person. Huh? They still had a Virginia. My grandmother smoked Virginia Slims. So what do you mean? My Bobby, yes.
Oh, my
God. Yes. Yeah, my grandmother.
That's when you could advertise cigarettes.
Right, the good old days, right.
That's when they were so popular. Then they were healthy.
Oh, so the claim is that their slogan was... No, I just wanted to talk about my grandmother, that's all. So close yet so far. That was their slogan. So close yet so far. The idea of back-to-back is that geographically your mom is next to the person. And yet, you're so far from the person. So like this. Imagine like you have two people that are standing back-to-back because they can't look at each other. And then imagine you have two people that are on the two opposite sides of the globe. But they're always thinking about each other. They love each other. They mamash can't stop thinking about each other. So which set of people are closer? So you'll understand that the latter set. Because people are not pieces of meat. You could be geographically right next to the person, but you're standing back to back. That means that you're mamash on two opposite sides of the globe. You're in different worlds. And two people on different opposite sides of the globe, but they're always thinking about each other and loving each other, they're in the same world. They're mamash next to each other. They're mamash together. And so that's why the Kruvim were the ultimate example of what it's like with us and Hashem. We're always geographically near Hashem, like the Kotzker said, I'll give you two apples if you can tell me where God is not. But on the other hand, we're either face-to-face or back-to-back. We could be back-to-back with Hashem. We're in a completely different world. So like Kotzker said, wherever you let him in. So tefillah is the ultimate act of letting him in, turning face to face with Hashem. Which, by the way, I don't know if you ever noticed the stam. When we go back after Shmona Esrei, and we bow, Eisah Shalom Bimraimov, right? Why do we bow? We bow left, right, forward, right? Eisah Shalom Bimraimov. Why do we bow to the left first? It's Hashem's right. So what does it mean halachically? You're face to face with God. That's why you bow to His left, to your left, which is His right. Whatever that means, vis-a-vis Hashem, because it means something. It has to do with the spheres, chasik vur, it doesn't matter now. But it means that you're face to face with Him, halachically, panim b'panim. So tefillah is the ultimate state of coming face to face with Hashem. And therefore, tefillah is the ultimate state of ascending to higher worlds. Ascending to higher worlds doesn't mean going anyplace else. It means having that deeper awareness and consciousness of God, letting Him in. And how do you let Him in? By coming deeper into yourself. Climbing up into higher worlds is by coming into touch with those deeper parts of oneself, where God really is located. That's what it means. So that's what we began discussing last week, that now, and that's really what we've been speaking about for the past 2 months, and now we start speaking about different parts of davening that actually are about what is that process, because again, that process of going face to face with God, the beauty of Chassidus is, now, before a person learns Chassidus, davening is just so annoying. It's like just so ridiculous. I mean, all these parts and these things. What if this is malachim, psukei dezimra, medas, biens, but once you learn chassidus, you and mamash understand it's mapped out that every part of davening is another ascent of consciousness. It's another type of awareness. And chassidus explains each step what types of awareness are going on and what meditations are necessary. Again, there's such a thing that once in a while, a person could all of a sudden in the middle of the day stand face to face with Hashem without the preparation. We actually just had, I'm going to do Chazar for Jay and Ezra. We just had in Gemara, we're learning Maseches Brachas. So Maseches Brachas, the Vav Amud Beis, there's a Gemara over there that says, La'olam yehe adam zohir betfilas hamincha. What does it mean? There's another chair over here. Yocheved, you could sit over here. La'olam yehe adam zohir betfilas hamincha, the Gemara says. Well, we won't make you sit in the back of the room.
But you're closer to the
tea. It's hot outside, right?
Yeah.
So la'ilam yeh adam zohir betfil simincha. We learned in the Gemara that a person wasn't mean poshpa la'ilam yeh adam zohir betfil simincha. You should be very careful with mincha. Be very careful. The Gemara says specifically, be careful with mincha. Why? So the obvious answer is because it's the middle of the day, and therefore it's easier. One could miss out on it. But the Sfarim say zohir la'ilam yeh adam zohir b'mincha. Zohir means like zohar, which means or, illumination. And the Chassidim say that mincha specifically makes a person illuminated more than anything else. Mincha illuminates a person more than anything else. Why? The exact opposite of everything we just said the past 15 minutes. Because mincha is in the middle of the day when your mom is bogged down and you're in the middle of a million things. You're in the middle of your work, the kids, the family, the job. You're in the middle of a million things you have in your head, right? Mom is in the middle of the day. The opposite of what we've spoken about, menuchas hanefesh, yishuv hadas. One doesn't have being able to come to self. One has expended all one's energy outside of self. That's why you get tired, because you're expending yourself outside of yourself. You're all over the place. And now you have to stand face to face with Hashem. So sometimes a person could stop in the middle and just say, right now, stop everything, compartmentalize everything, and just stand face to face with Hashem. And mamash to be able to come to have that sharp turn. That brings a light in some ways that's even more than shachris. Because shachris is gradual. That's the ladder. The ladder is that it's a gradual ascent. Mincha is a 180 degree turn, a sharp turn. And that brings a very powerful light. If a person is able to do that, mamish in the middle of everything, to just stop everything and turn face to face with Hashem, that brings a powerful light. But by definition, powerful lights are awesome and fun and inspiring and exciting, but they don't change you. Inspiration doesn't change you. Inspiration and change are opposites, right? Think for a second. Inspiration and true change are opposites.
Inspiration don't really last that long.
Right. Inspiration and true change are opposites. Inspiration could motivate a person, what should motivate a person, to then bring about a true change. But a person that is just inspired and doesn't do anything with it will not have any true change. They're a person that are addicted to people that are addicted. You know those people that are addicted to inspiration? People that are always, you know, looking for love in all the wrong places. People that are addicted to inspiration, that they're always trying to, if they need the shiur, they need this, they're always looking to get inspired by an external source. They're always looking to fall in love. They're always looking to have a reflexive response. That's not true growth. True growth is gradual. By definition, true growth is gradual. People that get frum in like 2 weeks, they go to Israel and 2 weeks later they already have payas down to the floor or skirts, you know, under the shoes, right? Those people, that in 2 weeks that happens, chances are it's not going to last because it's not real. There's a vart that I always say over, Stam, I'm for bringing a little now. I want to get to the sheep, but I just, it's since we're already speaking about it, since Eugenie made that face, I have to argue with it. So, that perplexed, for that confused face. So there's a vart from Abshamshin of Fall Hirsch, which is an absolutely fundamental idea. Oh, B'chavad the Baal Sabayas Le'akon. From Shamshon Fol Hirsch. So Shamshon Fol Hirsch said a very fundamental idea that's always kedai to bear in mind. Mamish. It's a big chizik, this idea. We say every night in Ma'ariv, V'hoser Satan milfaneinu me'achareinu. Right? We have it in Hashkaveinu, last bracha before Shemoneh Esrei, V'hoser Satan milfaneinu u'me'achareinu. Take away Satan from in front of us and from behind us. So Shamshon Fol Hirsch says, I understand why I don't want the Satan in front of me, because he's impeding my progress. He's stopping me, he's obstructing my ability to grow, to go further. That's why I don't want the Satan in front of me. But what do I care if he's behind me? Macharenu, let him be behind me. So Shamshon Fol Hirsch said there's a special Satan, one of the things that Satan does, the Yetzirah, that stands behind you and pushes you too fast. He pushes you too fast to have too high expectations from yourself, too high expectations from people around you, too high expectations from Hashem. That's a Satan that pushes you, and you want everything to be, we're so used to everything being instant. Everything should be instant. And if I have to get, you know, I'm inspired, I have to change my whole life overnight. That's a Satan. It's a Yetzihara. So people that are always looking to be inspired, it means that they want to be that push from behind. That's not real change. Real change is gradual. So getting back to what we're learning, so by the stomach, but I just want to reflect on it for a second. Especially since we're having a shir on tefillah, I should make it clear. I'd speak about it more. Real change is gradual. If a person is expecting an overnight change, that's a satan. It's not going to happen. It has to be slowly, one step at a time. That's the only way to make it real. True change, by definition, is going to be gradual. That's, by the way, I don't need to tell you, what's the difference between the geula from Mitzrayim and the geula of Mashiach? Right? It's very interesting. You remember when the Torah speaks about how we left Mitzrayim, we left in a hurry. B'chipozom yitzasa Mitzrayim. Everything was a hurry. Right? We hurried. By Mashiach, what does it say in Yeshayah? U'b'menusa lo yaleichum. We spoke about this by Natalia Talon's house here a couple weeks ago. U'b'menusa lo yaleichum. You will not run out. By Mashiach, Yeshayah says, by Mashiach, u'b'menusa lo yaleichum ki hoylech lefneichem Hashem. You will not run out. You'll go calmly and slowly when Mashiach comes. Mitzrayim was a quick light. Was a quick thing. It didn't last. 2,000 years, what are we essentially doing? We're making that slow, gradual change. Klal Yisrael is making that slow, gradual change. Therefore, it's going to last. So getting back to what we're learning, mincha is la'olam yehe adam zohir. Mincha, there could be such a thing as a sudden face-to-face with Hashem. That brings a huge light. It brings a huge light to a person. But it doesn't necessarily change a person b'pnimius. A pnimius dika change is shachris. Gradual, one step at a time. The sulam, the ladder. That's clear? Okay. So that being said, so that's now we're learning. We're beginning to learn the Seder of Tefillah, and we started last week with Parshas Vayechi, and really the Seder of Tefillah, there's a lot of steps that we're going to learn, Mitzvah Shem, but the first one is this piece is really the springboard to go to begin learning the Seder of Tefillah, because Imamish speaks about the idea that you need Reuven, Shimon, Levi to get to Yehuda, which we'll see is essentially all of Tefillah. All of Tefillah is Reuven, Shimon, Levi, Yehuda. So let's review what we did last week, and then we'll continue. So we spoke about, first of all, that what does it mean, Yehuda? We're trying to get to Yehuda. Everyone have sheets over there in the back? I think, is there no more? Oh, I'm sorry, I didn't bring more copies. I'm sorry. So, the idea of Yehuda, which we're trying, all Reuven, Shimon, Levi is to get to Yehuda. What's Yehuda? So we spoke about the what's Yehuda, that a Jew is called Yehudi, that when you have in Hebrew a verb with a yud at the beginning of the verb, it means present perfect, which means a constantly happening. So Yehuda means Hoida'a Tmidis. Kacha Ye Asa Iyov Kol Hayomim. So was Job want to do all the days. Yehuda means constantly acknowledging God. And acknowledging means being aware of something that is. That's what acknowledgement means by definition. Acknowledgement, when you acknowledge something, it means to become aware of something that is. That's what it means to acknowledge. I think we had this thing last week, but I think it's present perfect. That it's always happening. Johnny is walking. But that's not like always happening. In Hebrew, if it's at the beginning of a verb, it's always happening. Kacha ye'ase iyuv kol hayamim. So would Job do all the days. Was he want to do all the days? Want with an O, not with an A. Yeah. So Yehuda means constantly acknowledging on constant bittul, constant awareness of Hashem. Now, l'chayr, so how are we called Yehudi? If Yehuda means constantly being aware of God, constantly being face to face with God, so how are we able to be called Yehuda? So what's the answer? The neshama inside, how it is, b'makar chaytzvah, the soul as it is in its source, as it is in its source when it's one with God, which, by the way, is the soul that's within us. The soul that's, when we always speak about, it's time, when we speak about the soul in its source, how it is with Hashem. Hashem is not there, Hashem is here. So when we speak about the soul, how it is with God, it's talking about the soul that's within us, that's one with God, then that divine soul within us, is Yehuda, is Yehudi. Has that constant acknowledgement and a constant face-to-face with God. So what did Leah mean? Hapa'am oida es Hashem. Now I will thank God. Now after Reuven, Shimon, Levi is born. Now hapa'am oida es Hashem. So the Alter Rebbe teaches that for us in our conscious awareness, in our lives, in our world, that we, meaning we as we are in our regular mundane selves that like black and white cookies, the people that we are, that we're aware of, that we should be Yehuda, that Yehuda should be part of our lives in a tangible way, is Hapam Oides Hashem, is through Reuven, Shimon, and Levi. You have to go through Reuven, Shimon, and Levi. So last week we spoke about Reuven. What's the idea of Reuven? The idea of Reuven is Meloshon Re'ia, seeing, Reuven. And seeing means training oneself how to look at the world, how to visualize the world, training oneself to be able to see God. To be able to visualize godliness as one is looking at the world. Now, I didn't mention to you last week, I don't want to get into too much in Kabbalah, but the reason that's called Reuven, I don't know if you ever heard of the idea of Shem Ma and Shem Ban. They're different in Kabbalah, different ways that the Shem Havai, Yudke Vavke, is spelled out in Kabbalah. So, in the higher worlds, there's what's called Shem Ma, Mem Hei, 45, where Yudke Vavke is spelled out with Alephs, Yud, Hey, Aleph, Vav, Hey, Aleph. It's Gematria 45. And Ban is when it's spelled out with Heys. Hey, Hey, Vav, Vav, Hey, Hey. Yud, Kei, Vav, Ketivim is spelled out. Corresponds to different levels of Hashem's light. Generally, Ma, is the Zohar, the side masculine is called Ma. The side of feminine is called Ban. So the Yichud, Mao, Ban, unifying Mao, Ban. Ma is the upper worlds, Ban is the lower world. Kutcher, Brichu, and Shechina. Unifying them is essentially what Mashiach is all about. So Reuven means Reuban, because looking at the world is God's imminent light, also known as the Shechina. We spoke about last week that when you're looking at the world, the Baal Shem Tov says, when you look at the world, have in mind that you're actually seeing the Shechina, which is the feminine aspect of God's light, meaning the indwelling, imminent presence of God that's in the world. So Reuven is to look at the godliness in the world, and thereby what? Come to Ahava. As we spoke about, the Alter Rebbe said, that the Indian of Re'iyah, he said, Re'iyah goremes hamshachas b'chinis ava, because Re'iyah hu Indian is skarvas derechiba. It doesn't just mean looking, it means staring. Staring in a way that is the way to come to love. That the only way to really love something is by staring, by not just being, it's not enough to be aware mentally, but to actually stare, to look at the thing very closely, to look at Hashem in the world and thereby come to ava. So the first thing, which is psuke de zimra, Psuke de Zimra is about learning to look at godliness in the world. In other words, not just meditating that God created the world. You don't come to love God. It's a rule. You won't come to love God by just knowing that God created the world. You'll come to appreciate God. You won't come to love Him. You might love your house, but you're not going to love the architect and contractor that made it. You'll appreciate them. You might tip them. But you're not going to love them. As much as you love your house, you're not going to love the person that made it. You might really love a certain cake. You're not going to love the baker. So if you look at the world as just something that God made, you'll tip your hat and say, Shkoyach God, thank you very much. Appreciate it. Very appreciative. But that's not, that's the different thing is loving is when you see things that you love as being aspects of the person that you love. Seeing things that you love as being aspects of the person that you love. Not things that the person made, aspects of the person that you love. Same thing, and the truth is, when to come, if somebody gives you a lot of gifts, that's not going to make you love the person. No comment. I know you live in the five towns now, but you didn't always live in the five towns. Yeah, so as nice as the diamonds may be, that's not going to get a person to, it's not going to make you love the person. As many gifts as the person gives you, you love a person when the person's character traits, the way the person is, who the person is. So as much as you look at the world as being a gift from Hashem, you look at your children as being gifts of Hashem, it's going to make you very appreciative. It's not going to necessarily make you love Him. When you look at your children as being aspects of God's light, that this is godliness, this is a way that God is manifesting, you're seeing Him and you're staring at it, that brings to Ahava. Yeah.
Is there a possibility that sometimes when you look, this concept doesn't bring to Ahava, but it can bring to Yira?
Like, in what way?
In you're staring at something and it's like fearful.
That's awesome that you say that, because that's Shimon. We're getting to that right now.
Okay.
That's mamash the next step. Shkoyach. So let's see further. This was summarizing next week. Now let's go. Number two, exactly. Thank you. Look on the left side of the page, number two. Ubeis, so the first Reuven was Psuki de Zimmer, was staring and coming to Ahava. Ubeis, yeah, see where it says number two on the left side? Left side. See it, number two? We're on the side that says Vayechi?
Yeah.
Got it? Okay. So he says, Ubeis parsha shnia shebekriya shma. Oh, I'm sorry. So Lamaisa, the Reuven, we didn't go through the whole arichas. We don't have time to read the whole thing. But Reuven is psuk de zimra up to vahaftas Hashem alekecha. That's all Reuven. Reuven is a psuk de zimra until you're able to say vahaftas Hashem alekecha. We read that last week. If you remember where it was underlined, the last thing we read last week that's underlined, he says, Moilat ava bezgalas liboy. You look at stare God enough till you come to Vahaftas Hashem Alekecha. But then Shimon is the second parsh of Shema. The second part of Shema. Let's see over here inside. Uparsha shnir shebekriya shema bechina Shimon. Vahaya im shamaya tishma'u. To hear. What's the connotation? Because Shimon is hearing as opposed to seeing. To hear about something as opposed to seeing it. Key, let's go where it's underlined. Well, he says Tishmu Shibechina Shoiv. You see, it says Tishmu Bechina Shoiv. Well, it's not underlined. Tishmu is Bechina Shoiv. What does Shoiv mean? You ever heard of the concept of Ratzi v'Shoiv?
You mentioned it.
I did. I mentioned it last week. Yeah. Okay. Ratzi.
The white plane and
the black. Right. True. Thank you. Better than I do. So Ratzi v'Shoiv is that it says in Yecheskel by the Divine Chariot. It says that he saw the angels Ratzi v'Shoiv running towards God and v'Shoiv returning back. Retreating, running towards God and retreating. And all of reality is in that way of like the pulse, like the heart's pulse of a two-step, running and retreating. That's how relationships are, that's how life is. Vayi er vayvoker yom echad, to have one day, you have to have night and day. It's always going to be running and returning. So Ahava is running towards. But then Shoiv is that Yira. Now how do you translate Yira? What's the translation of Yira Sashem? Awe of God. Good. I'm happy nobody said fear. Very good. Yira is awe of God. Not fear, but awe. Like you're saying that all of a sudden you're taken back. You run so close to Ein Sof, to God's infinity, and all of a sudden you're like, whoa. All of a sudden it brings to this feeling of dread. It could bring to a feeling of dread. Dread of the one you're being aware of from His majesty, His greatness, His grandeur, and dread from realizing who I myself am. Who am I to come near to the king? Both of those components, like all of a sudden you're running towards this person and you're like, maybe I'm not good enough. Maybe the person's too good for me. And that's the shoiv. So look, Re'iya hu mikarov v'hainu b'chines ava shemachmas hakiruv. Seeing is closeness. Aval shmiya hu mirochik. That's what the connotation of hearing is, that now you could only hear it, you can't look at it anymore. Not because you want to stand back to back, the opposite. You got so close, you came to such a deep feeling of closeness that you have to avert your eyes. It's the opposite of standing back to back. It's that there's such a deep feeling that you can't look at the person. Because there's such a close feeling, you can't look at the person. And that comes from that awe. That awe could come from that being in awe of the whole situation. Shmiu merochik bu agaremes bechines yira. Ukemei shekosev, like the Pasuk says in Chavakuk, Hashem shamati shemacha yaresi. Hashem, I hear your name, I hear about you, yaresi, and therefore I went to a state of awe. Let's skip words on the line. All of a sudden you say to yourself, who am I? How could I have the goal, the audacity to come close? All of a sudden in one's heart will fall a great awe and a great fear. Like we see by Matan Torah, Look at the words in the puzzle. By Matan Torah, Vayar Ha'am, the nation saw God. Vayanu'u. You know what Vayanu'u means? They shook. Vayamdu Merochik. And they went back. Remember, you know what the Gemara says? That Hashem had to send angels to keep pushing us forward. Right? Because we kept going back. We kept drawing back. And so Hashem sent angels to push us forward. It's one of the reasons, by the way, they say by chuppah there's the unterfears, the shoshvin, and the chassan and kal have to be shtapped to the chuppah because they're drawn back, you know, for good reasons, bad reasons, but they're drawn back, so they have to, so to speak, be schlepped, you know, schlepped to the chuppah. The joke is that they say that these days you need the unterfears to hold back, they shouldn't run to the chuppah, but whatever. So vayam vayanu, they started shaking, vayam de merochik, and they stood back from that year. Bebechina shmiya. That if your heart starts running, you have to return back. That's the year, that's the next step. Then one has to be aware of the majesty of Hashem. In other words, this is also part of the process of that awareness of God. Why? Let's talk for a second. We could understand why you need Reuven to come to the awareness of God, to come to higher worlds, deep awareness. You need to arouse that love by visualizing God's light in the world, as we spoke about last week. But why would you need to come to this awe? So you had said that it's a natural result, right? That sometimes it could be a natural result. But the Alter Rebbe is saying that no, don't forget, Hapam Oides Hashem means that you need each of these steps to be able to come to Yehuda, to be able to reveal Yehuda. That means this awe is a necessary ingredient in the process of being able to have that relationship, that deep awareness, and that deep connection. Why?
Because it's humility.
So you're saying vis-a-vis Hashem,
and therefore right. You can have the ability to stand, you know, to understand your question.
Well, you're right. The vis-a-vis Hashem knows there has to be that humility for it to be vis-a-vis Hashem.
Which is the
awe. Mm-hmm. The God's greatness, which puts me in a state of awe. Nidu kim mitzad Hashem.
Which gives me the ability to stand before.
Why does that give me the ability to stand before Hashem? Why? Why does the humility give me the ability to stand before Hashem? Why is that a necessary ingredient to be able to do it?
I have to articulate what I
think. Okay.
Is that a natural progression in order to get to Avas Hashem? First you have to have the Yira.
Well, here he's saying Ava first, you noticed.
Because...
So is Yira a higher... Madrega, is Yira a higher...
Well, I was waiting actually for somebody to ask that. That L'chor here is saying Ava and then Yira. Usually the Seder is Yira first, right? We say Reishis Chachma Yira Hashem.
Right.
So the answer is because there's two types of Yira.
Yira me'ava.
Well, there's a Yira that comes before Ava and there's Yira that comes after Ava. The Yira that comes before Ava is really not awe. It's not as awe as much as a what's the word I'm looking for? A respect, right? It's a respect. The first year reverence, right? Reverence. The first year is a reverence. Shavisa shen negdi tamid. When we say the first halacha in Shulchan Aruch is to always know you're standing before the king, that's supposed to be all day. That's not what he's talking about here. Think about it for a second. This is a year that's dafka by tefillah. I mean, when are you supposed to have Yiras Hashem? By davening, the whole day. By the way, parenthetically, Ahava, one cannot have all day. Interesting. It says Beferish in the Sfam, one can't have Ahava Hashem all day. You can't love God all day. People that... Do you ever had a relationship with somebody that you feel love for that person all the time?
Yo, Hashem's just not anybody. I'm saying like.
Yeah, but it's you're still a human being. Not what?
You have to be misbehaving on it all day long if you were gonna love Hashem.
How could you? I mean,
if there's emotions involved.
Like, you're answering that it's vis-a-vis. So go ahead, Mary.
I'm not saying I don't know how it is, but I don't know how it isn't.
It's kind of like being engaged.
I'm saying we are talking about Hashem. We're not talking about a person.
So, but you keep saying it's Hashem doesn't change the fact that we're human beings. We're playing with our deck, so it doesn't matter. Vis-a-vis Hashem, you're right. Hashem deserves it and everything. But Lamaisa, so you have all these malachim that are loving Hashem all day, but we're human. We can't. I mean, there are times I'm sure you've wanted to, you know, want to strangle your spouse, your children. You feel that sometimes, right? You don't always feel love. You might love the person very much, but sometimes you want to strangle them.
You always love your children, even if you want to strangle them.
Yeah, but it's not. But that's not what you're feeling consciously now.
No, but when you're feeling anger,
at that moment you're not. Of course you do. But you again, Avas Hashem. Avas Hashem. Also, there's always the innate Avas Hashem. I'm not talking about what's going on. You always have to differentiate between what's there and what you're feeling.
Feelings change.
Feelings change. There's an innate feel. There are innate feelings inside, right? There are latent feelings and there are acute feelings. Remember, we differentiated between latent and acute. There's latent feelings and there are acute feelings, right? You don't always feel the same level. People that you love, it's not always the same level of Ava. There's times that you feel it. There are times that you don't. But so the fact that it's always there, that's same thing Hashem. You always feel love of Hashem, but it's not that you don't feel it. It's there inside. That's all of this is about revealing stuff. That's what we spend the first part of the shiur talking about. It's trying to come to terms and come into contact with those things that are there. You don't have to make things that aren't there, but you have to reveal them. So Ava, one can't feel Ava all day. You can't be in a state of love all day. You wouldn't be able to do anything. You'd be wrong around saying Nishmas all day. You wouldn't be able to come if you're just in a state of love all day. And so too with relationships, waxes and wanes. There are times that you feel love, there are times you feel like you want to strangle the person. That's the Seder, right? Problems when you end up strangling the person, but right? But that's the only feeling. But Lamaisa, what's supposed to happen is there's supposed to be that's anytime. You can't be feeling av all day. Yira, you have to have all day, right? Is that true? You have to have yira all day, yeah or no? Shvisi Hashem lenegdi, tamid. Yira Hashem, you're supposed to have all the time. Right? So year is all day. So the question is like this. It's a dual question. Number one, so what's the year, which we already answered, but I'm just speaking it out. I'm articulating it. L'charovi, according to this, year is only by davening. And second of all, why are you able to have year all day and yet function regularly if you have year all day? The answer is because the year that you have to have all day and the year we're talking about here are two types of year. Shivisa Shem Negdi Tamar is a year which is an Indian of reverence and respect. It's not that you're actually feeling awe of God. A Jew is supposed to live your life in the way that you're always in the presence of God, but not that you're actually aware of God's majesty. You're dealing with, you know, your boss or something. You're driving a car. You're in CVS looking for the right toothpaste. You can't be thinking about God's majesty, right? So that's a year of that you're always aware that God is there. That's that type of year, which is a year of what's really called in the Chassidus terms that Kabbalas Ol Malchus Shemaim, accept the yoke of the kingdom of heaven. It's a general Kabbalas Ol, a general accepting the yoke that there's a God. I'm his servant. I'm his subject. Period. This is talking about a yira that comes from mamish awareness of Hashem. This is a yira that's not just a reverence. This is a yira that's a complete state of awe. So the question is: so why is this a necessary? Did that answer your question?
Oh, I don't know. I'm sorry. The last question.
Right. Why can I have it for all day?
I'm just a little with one step behind in my head. Yeah.
Really need a couple hours a week for this, but whatever. But Lamaisa, but why is this a necessary ingredient to be able to have that awareness, that step face to face with God? That's the question now. But why must you have this yira You had mentioned that this year is a result. It's a result. It's a natural result. Once you become aware of God's majesty, a year is going to fall on you. And that's true. That's what he says. Tipol olav emo pachad. All of a sudden, you're going to feel God's greatness. Or you know. I mean, by the way, this type of year, it doesn't have to be vis-a-vis Hashem. You can have this from the Grand Canyon or the Hayden Planetarium. Right? You always had the experience. You go to the planetarium and they make
it's
you feel.
The same thing.
What?
It's the same thing.
What do you mean it's the same? It's the same type of feeling.
Yeah. It's God. I'm saying it's
God. Right, and a chanami. But
yeah.
I'm saying even a person that doesn't believe in God.
Okay.
Even a person that doesn't believe in God. Forget about any spiritual experience. Anybody that goes to the planetarium, you know when they show you that, like they make you feel how small you are?
Yeah.
Right? They show you like, I mean, you know, all we are is dust in the wind. Is that we're not dust in the wind. Dust is big. You're not even dust in the wind, right? You mamish, and you feel that like completely. You're overcome by the smallness of who you are on the planet. So, if at that moment you're sitting in the planetarium by the Grand Canyon, and somebody says to you, you know, you want a milkshake, you'd be like, you're like just too. You can't do anything. I remember I went. A friend of mine has, her mother has this beachfront condo in Miami Beach, on like the 30-something floor, overlooking the ocean. Remember, I walked in, it was like sunset, and I was like, how do you do stuff? Like, how do you eat lunch? I couldn't move. I'm like, you know what I'm saying? That it's like, it's a natural, it's nothing to do with God. It's just this feeling of like, I went to Chile, I went once to speak in Chile, I spent a week there. So I was very afraid. Like, I thought Chile would be like, you know, cockroaches and stuff. I thought it was some kind of third world country or something. I didn't know. So, but Chile, it's a very modern country. It's a beautiful country. But I'll never forget when I stepped out of the airport and the first time I put my eyes on the Alps, not the Alps, the Andes, snow-capped. And like for a week, I didn't take my eyes off of them. It's like, people get used to it. They're just, but I'm like standing there, I'm like, I just couldn't believe it. It's like, so it's unbelievable. So that's a year that you could have from the Grand Canyon also, or from the Andes, right? But what you're right, over here, by a Jew, it's to realize that that's Hashem, and Hashem is that much more than the Andes and the Grand Canyon and the Milky Way and the solar system and everything, right? So that's why it's a natural result of being aware of Hashem. What I'm asking now is, why is it a necessary ingredient, not a natural result? Why is it a necessary ingredient to be able to then stand face-to-face with Hashem? I can understand why I need the love to propel me towards God in order to stand face to face with Him. Why do I need the yira to push me back and come to that state of awe in order to be able to stand face to face with Him? Why? Why is that a necessary ingredient?
It definitely brings to love again in saying...
That's true. It's always that two-step
like
dance, right? Avir. That's true. But again, but you're that's true, but we're talking about, but year itself is a necessary ingredient.
To know your place.
Why?
So that you can be humble.
Why? Why do you need to be humble?
You have to negate yourself.
Why?
To get to the essence.
To be grateful.
This isn't just grateful. We're not talking about here being grateful. We're talking about being year, right? It's not just grateful, it's being overcome with His Majesty and being propelled back, being like completely, you know, like seeing a sunset on Miami Beach. Why do you need that humility? Why do you need that bittul? Why do you need that
so the ego
place?
Doesn't take over.
To
be a vessel.
To be a vessel, that's the vart. Mm-hmm. To be a vessel. Because you're talking about unifying with the infinite. What's the vessel that can make you a vessel for the infinite?
An empty one.
Huh?
An empty one?
Right, exactly. It has to be complete ayin, nothingness. You have to be in a state where you're able to be a vessel for the infinite. Means you have to come to a state of ayin, to nothingness, to be a makabel, completely a makabel. I'm going to say something again. I'm going to talk in codes, but you'll understand what I mean. In relationships, when a person is only loving, you're always looking for certain things that you're looking to get out of the relationship, and sometimes you don't open yourself to be able to accept that person for who that person is. Sometimes there has to be a step back to be able not to just be looking what I'm looking to get out of the relationship, which is ahava, which is I like these things about the person, So then it could be that all, you know, you're in love with the idea of the person or what you're looking to get from the person instead of the person himself or herself, and therefore you have to step back and have once in a while that cooling down of love to be able to have a deep appreciation and be a vessel to receive who that person is and not just what you were projecting and what you wanted to get from the person.
Isn't the root of Ahava is to give?
Yes.
So now you're saying you have to do the receiving.
Right. Exactly. You have to make yourself, put yourself in a place where you're now able to receive. Bechlal, you know that Ahava is in Kabbalah years is Nukva and Ahava is Zohar. So that, and again, we're not talking about women and men, because women and men have to have both. But it's that state of making oneself a vessel. So that's why in order to be able to receive Ein Sof, one has to come to a state of Bittul, complete nothingness, and receive God for who He is. And also you understand that by Psukei de Zimra, when you were coming to loving Hashem by viewing Him in the world, so you were loving Hashem for those aspects that you love about Him, the beautiful sunset and the Grand Canyon and your children and all those things that you were, you know, the aspect, the beauty that you see and the grandeur that you see in the world. So you come to love Hashem, but you're all coming to love Hashem on your terms, on what you're perceiving of Him, right? Because you could only love what you perceive. Like we spoke about, you could only love what you experience. So by definition, when you're loving Hashem, you're only loving those aspects of God that what? That you've experienced. So while that might have changed you, it limited you to only be aware of those aspects of Him that you're experiencing. So now comes V'hayayim Shamaya, Hashem Shamati Shemacha Yaresi. Now all of a sudden I'm propelled back and I'm like, whoa, God is infinite. He's much more than that. Now I have to realize that anything that I perceived and I visualized and I saw in Psukei de Zimra or in the world, He's much more than that. And I go to a state of complete nothingness. I'm propelled back and I realize, whoa, this is way beyond me. And so I could be a receptacle to allow God to shine in me on His terms. Yeah? And then, yes, that will bring, like you said, that will also bring to other states of Ahava, because then you start loving those aspects of Hashem also. And there's always that constant cycle of learning new things about God, learning new things about the person, loving them, and then wanting to learn new things about the person. So going back, that's the running and returning. So that's Ahava and Yira. So that's Psukei de Zimra and Vahavta, and then V'hayim Shamaya Tishmu. Okay, now let's go to Levi. We have another couple. We have more time. Let's go to Levi. Yeah, go ahead. Please ask questions. It's what? Yeah, please. It's not a lecture. It's a shiur. So questions are highly encouraged. I've always had, you know, experience that, you know, people come over to me after shiur. This might not be relevant, but like, I wish everyone heard the questions. So it's always important to have the questions. Yeah.
No, just to understand, you're saying that the Ahava of Reuven brings you to the Shimon Yira? Like when you contemplate all the wonders of Hashem, it brings you to Yira.
Then the next step, if you'd contemplate that enough, and then you realize that He's infinitely more than that, right? Well, there's two things. First of all, the wonders of the world, the beauty in the world that you've experienced by staring at it, all of a sudden you come to be like in complete awe of it, of the world itself, right? Those very things that cause the Ahava could bring you a state of awe. And then you realize that He's infinitely more than that. Mm-hmm. You've only perceived one drop of it, mm-hmm. Right? We'll speak more about it, Mitzvah Shem, but I'll just tell you now, one second. I'll just tell you now, there's a meditation, which we're going to speak a lot more about specific meditations to have, but I'll just tell you now, based on Yehuda's question, that you meditate that the world is the light of Hashem. And then meditate that the light of God that's imminent in the world, the Shekhinah, vis-a-vis Kutcha Brichu, is like one drop that you took out of the ocean. That's the amount of God's light that's in, you know, the solar system and the Milky Way and stuff, vis-a-vis Or Ein Sof, the infinite light of Hashem, is like, imagine you put your finger in the ocean and you take out a drop. Try to picture, to visualize that you take what you meditate, that you take one drop out of the ocean. How much of the ocean do you have in your finger? 1/1. Big number. So then you meditate. After you meditate that the world is God's light, you visualize Psukah Dezimra, you came to love Hashem, that the world is His light. This is my beloved. But then you realize that all the light of God that's in the world, vis-a-vis His infinite light, is like one drop of water vis-a-vis the entire ocean. So you're like, I'm completely overcome.
You're talking about the contracted light of like the Shechina and
yeah.
then the...
And Kutcher Brichu is infinite essence. Yeah. Yeah.
How does the seeing of Reuben or Shmuel versus the hearing of Shimon Kari?
So last week we spoke a lot about that the seeing results, the seeing brings to Ava, because when you stare, how do you come to love somebody? By staring at them. So you stare at Hashem, you stare at His beauty, you come to love anything. You come to love art by experiencing it, by staring at it, by being focusing on it. This means, it doesn't just mean looking at it, it means focusing. That's how you come to love anything, is by focusing on it. And by definition, that's kiruv. Hiskarvas derechiba. Hiskarvas derechiba, in a way of love, coming close to the thing. Shmia is merochik. Shmia means that even something that the connotation of something that you hear about, that you hear but you don't see, is that you're far from the thing. So God's infinite light, you hear about. You can't see it. You hear about His majesty. Or, using the parable that we spoke about before, you love certain aspects of a person, of a thing, whatever, and then you're aware, you have this, you hear, so to speak, that there's more to the person. You don't see it, so that's why you draw back, to be able to make yourself a vessel for the other parts of the person. So that means hearing is that I know that there's something more. I haven't seen it, I don't experience, but I know that there's that much more. So Shmir means to draw back. Hashem Shemate Shemacha Yeresi, I have Yira, I've heard these aspects of Hashem that's that much greater than I am and everything I experienced. Yeah.
Is this something that sort of brings you more home? When you look at something, you generally see it, all of it, I guess. But when you hear something,
right now, No, you're right. When you
hear something, there's more to be heard that you don't hear.
I'll tell you, if you ever read classic books, right? Mm-hmm. So you've ever read classic books, like, I mean, the real classics. Sometimes the authors will take like 2 or 3 pages describing the scene before they get to the action. So when you're a kid, it's like annoying as heck, right? That's why you're just like, you know, Harry Potter and Stephen King, that there's like one sentence, you know, he was tall. And then already, and he said, you know, but in the old books, you know, like, you read the old classics, they'll spend like 2 pages trying to describe what the person looks like. Right, but the emphasis is that it's an art. It's a real art because the author's trying to get you to be able to visualize it in your head. And so what you're saying, which is true, is that when you see something, it takes a split second. When you hear something, it's a process because you're getting little by little. And so when you're hearing about something, you're also hearing that there are things that I don't know about yet. That's that connotation, yeah. Someone else had a question? No? So let's try to get to Levi. Let's do a little of Levi. Vihine. No, it's already 9:30. Just another 3 minutes, please. That. Hine acher kriyashma. I'm not going to do justice to it. Let's start it. Okay, let's just start Levi. Vihine acher kriyashma. After kriyashma, after you have this year, this ava, and then the yira. By the way, you know, I just want to make clear. Does everyone get the 2 levels of yira? The yira before ava and the yira after ava. The difference between the yira that one has to have all day and the yira that's by davening. General recognition, reverence, and respect, as opposed to complete awe.
See, I have a question about that because I know, like, I know Rabbi Cooper Smith. He said that the lower.
Who? Cooper Smith?
Cooper Smith from Mishnah Torah. So he said the lower form of Yira is really fear of Onesh. It's really fear. And then when you go from that Yira, then you get to the Oah.
Okay. So let me tell you, in Chassidus, Yira Sa'onesh is not even on the table. In other words, Yira Sa'onesh is, in the Chassidus Svarim, is not a level of Yira. It's almost like Yeshus. Yeshus means it's almost like selfish. So, when we speak about levels of yira, levels of avodah, so it's true there is a place for yira sa'onesh, but Chassidus says it's not a level of yira of avodah. It's not avodah Hashem. One doesn't work on coming to yira sa'onesh. One utilizes Yiras HaOynesh as an emergency measure. That's what the Sfarim say. Yiras HaOynesh, it says like, Yiras HaOynesh that is like it says in the Sfarim that Hashem created fire, like the Malamed keeps the whip in the classroom on the peg. That's what it says in, I think, Tana Develio, one of these Chazals. I don't when did, Rebbe just spoke about this recently. When was it? Was there Rav Kook Shir last Friday morning? I don't think Rebbezer was, of course, there. But 2 weeks ago, Rebbe spoke about how, you know, you could take certain Chazals and put it, you know, certain ideas from Torah and put it together and make Judaism into like this nasty, you know, Calvinistic Puritan religion that scares the heck out of people. And there are books like that. So one of those Chazals that like these, you know, really scary ones, it says that why is there fire in the world? So it's like the Malamed in a Cheder, he keeps the whip on the peg for all the children to always be able to see, to keep them in line. So that's what fire is, to, you know, the fires of hell. So that's like a very, that's like, that's so that's, the Chur, you have things like that in Chazal, right? You have things like that in Chazal. So but the Sfarim say that that's mamash like an emergency measure. The Sfarim say that Yiras HaOynesh is only if like a person is in a, such a taiva.
When all else fails.
When all else fails.
Or,
then use Yiras HaOynesh.
It's a springboard. It's a place you start from there and then you move up. I mean,
Yiras HaOynesh is a springboard to therapy. To going to therapist's office. It's not a springboard to wanting to get close to God. Yiras HaOynesh just... I don't know, it could be. I mean, if when I think of Yiras HaOynesh and you look at God as this, you know, big bad, the big bad wolf, I'm not going to want to get close to him.
It also causes the Yetzer Hara to like push that element that like causes you to sin again because I'm so bad already. I'm
exactly. I don't think it's a springboard to anything good. It's in the way Chassidus says about it, it's mamash just an emergency measure. I'll tell you a story. This is like, I mean, this is, if it wasn't so sad, when I was learning in Yerushalayim, so there's one Jew I used to eat by a lot on Shabbos. He's pardon, you know, I'm always had an eclectic taste in everything, but in Judaism also, like I like to, you know, experience. So this guy's an Aturi Karta gentleman. Yeah, yeah. So we became friends until I, you know, whatever, until I started learning Chassidus Chabad and he heard about it and then he didn't want to be my friend anymore. But so I used to eat by his house a lot. And there's a... So I'll never forget that he, you know, he's the thriller with the zebra, you know, outfit, the, you know, the whole. So he had his kids around the table, I think four boys, little boys, like ages like, I don't know, 9, 6, 4, whatever. And it's one of those Yerushalmi families where they're not extraordinarily wealthy. So the food on the table always make me feel very bad because it was always like rationed out. Like it wasn't a lot. It wasn't a lot of food. So I very easy for me to keep my diet when I was by him. So one time he like was rationing out the pickles and he gave each one of the kids 2 pickles. So then one of the kids, I think it must have been a 4-year-old kid or something, he said to his father, he's like, Tatech ken bekumen nach mafon chamut, however he says, could I have another pickle? So he said, nay. Kids, he gets up. So I noticed that the 4-year-old, when the father's looking, takes a pickle. There have been more heinous war crimes in history, right? He comes back, and I guess he noticed something. He says, "Like I promise you." He says, looks at his son like this. Says, "Hast nicht mehr von Gehenna? You're not afraid of Gehenna?" And I was like, I was so scared. I don't get easily intimidated, but I was scared. He was like, "Mamish." So I don't think that's a springboard for anything except like needing therapy. Yiras HaOynesh is the pshat. Yiras HaOynesh, that's what Chassidus says. Again, it might be, I mean, you know, the Rabbi Cooper's, I mean, could be another Musar Sfarim. They're very into Yiras HaOynesh. It's one of the differences between Musar and Chassidus. In Chassidus Sfarim, say that Yiras HaOynesh is like, you know those things in case of emergency, break glass? You know what I'm saying? In case of, you know, the chocolate chip cookie. You ever seen the stores? They have the chocolate chip cookie in case of emergency, break glass, you know? So Yiras HaOynesh is like, in case of emergency, break glass. If a person's hit by a taiva and you can't start contemplating and meditating, then you should use Yiras HaOynesh. That's what this farm said.
I don't think that's what I meant. I think the reason that most of us don't do Averis is because it says, you know, we all know that there are repercussions if we don't do certain things. It's not, we don't all keep the Torah because we're all in such awe of Hashem. We know that there's schar and there's onesh. I don't think it's because we're all so... we're in such awe of Hashem all the time that we keep the Torah. We know that there is accountability in Yiddishkeit. So that's what I meant. I don't mean that. I think that we're all very aware that if there's onus, if we sin, there's going to be punishment. I don't think it's that we all afraid of the whip at all times. I think there's accountability in our religion. And I think that's the bottom rung, I think, is that we are all aware of that there's char and onesh. And then I think the next level of Europe, in my opinion, I don't know, is then you gradually get up to it, that we don't do it because, wow, we're in such awe of Hashem that we don't want to ruin our relationship with Hashem. But I think that's a very high madrega. I think the lower
let me ask you, let me, I hear what you're saying. Let me ask you a question. Let me ask you a question.
Wrong, but I think that's...
When you pay your taxes, right? You pay your taxes.
Right.
So what's making you pay your taxes? Accountability, right? You know that you're going to be in trouble if you don't, right?
Correct.
But what's the feeling over there, the accountability that you're talking about? What's the... It's not that... You don't think about going to jail.
You do it because it's the right thing to do.
And there's a general reverence and respect and acknowledgement that there's a government that you have to pay for.
Exactly.
That's what I meant... That's a year of being aware that there's a king. The accountability that you're talking about, I don't think that during the course of the day we're afraid of being punished. I think that there's a general knowledge that there's a God and we have to do what he wants.
Right.
But and that acknowledgement is what is that level of year that the awareness of the king and that there's a general awareness of being in the king's presence. That's a general... No, it's like, you know that there's an IRS, you know that there's a government, but it's not that you're actually afraid of... Yiras Ha'oinish is focusing on the punishment. Yiras Ha'oinish is looking at the fires of hell, is mamash thinking about suffering.
But read the Torah. There's, you know, it's very clearly written in the Torah. If we behave, we get schar. If we don't behave, we get punished. Hashem spells it out.
Right, so...
And that's the basis of our whole...
But you know what the Rambam says about that? The Rambam says that that's mamish for children. It's an interesting thing. The Rambam speaks about that the Torah speaks about being punished is for children that begin when they first train people to serve Hashem. But the Rambam says clearly one has to grow out of that.
But we're all brought up like that.
But we have to grow out of that.
Right. So that's the higher... As we grow, we get to the higher madrig of Europe.
This
but we're brought
therapy.
Up.
Right, but
I don't know, maybe, I don't know.
But I'm just differentiating between. Listen, I'm differentiating between the awareness of God's presence as a presence, and actually being scared that He's going to beat you up. That you pay your taxes is because the government is a very real entity for you.
And they're going to beat us up if we don't pay
it. Right, but you don't. It's not necessarily that you actively are thinking about what it'd be like in jail. What it'd be like wearing orange. Right, you don't actively have these. You don't visualize what it would be like, you know, getting slop in the mess room, you know, in jail. You don't have that fear. You have a general acknowledgement of the fact that there is a government you have to pay. That general acknowledgement, the general reverence and respect, is the Shavis Hashem Nagisam, that you're standing before a king. That there's a king, exactly like you said, that you're accountable to. Accountability and being scared of punishment is two steps, right? You agree with me?
I do, but I think you start with the... Okay, whatever, it's semantics. I think you start with the fear, but then you grow into the...
But Regina, when you say start with the fear, do you think that every day you have to start with the fear every day?
No, I think when you're... We're brought up.
Exactly, exactly. So we're talking about now, but now...
Now we're adults.
Now we're adults. Now what do we work on? We're learning about what should be our avoda. What should every day be our avoda?
I agree with that.
Oh, so the first step of avoda of yira is that general acknowledgement and that accountability, the fact that I'm standing before a king, I should make that more part of my life. Okay, so you're right, it was semantics, we just have to clarify. So that first general acknowledgement and accountability that there's a king, that it should be, he should be more real to me. That should be something, that's the first thing, that's before ava. Then there's the higher level of awe is after ava. So we're all agreed?
Does something come after that?
Well, yeah, Levi and Yehuda.
Well, the higher level of awe.
Levi and Yehuda.
You didn't explain now the higher level of awe. You talked about the general reverence.
Right.
The hava.
And the general awe is what we spoke about, the awe from God's majesty.
the sunset in Miami Beach.
Right, as an example. Right, the general awe from God's godless, like that itself, from what you experienced in awe of that, and then the infinite light of Hashem that you hear about, that it's far from you, that you know that you've only experienced a little of it, and you're awe from what's much more than that. That also, tough.
Why does Rambam say that we have to start with that simplistic approach with kids, which is basically the fear, which is exactly what that father did, and it was right what you're, based on what you're saying?
Good question.
But what I'm trying to say is why are we even going there?
Why do we start with it? So the emes is like this. I think, this I heard from Rebbe Weinberger, that in Torah itself, there are tzaddikim that taught us, and this is a very heavy thing to say, but in Torah itself, tzaddikim taught us that there are those tzaddikim that taught us which aspects of Torah are most relevant to us when. So there were generations that Yiras Ha'Einish was very functional. Today it doesn't really work. And that's why Chassidus is not into it in the last generations. So there's definitely, like Regina said, is it true? There is a certain sense of accountability. One does have to be aware of it generally. Like a child has to know that there's a din v'cheshbon. We have to know there's din v'cheshbon. We have to know in the future there's going to be din v'cheshbon. But it's not something to focus on. It has to be there. We have to know that. But it's not part of our avodah to make that part of our daily life. So I think at that moment, for the father to say that to the son, at the moment of doing a sin, quote-unquote, as if the four-year-old did a sin, right? But let's pretend for a second he wanted to teach him he's doing something wrong. At that moment, to say something like that is just going to freak him out. It's not going to bring anything constructive.
I'm just saying, why then? I guess, okay, if you're saying just this generation, it's not going to work.
Right.
I guess the question was, why with children, why can't we teach the same type of reverence?
Well, that's what I'm saying. So Chassidus says to do that also, that today already we should be doing that. But there does have to be that accountability. There has to be that accountability.
So how do you find that balance then, I guess?
Not to say it when they do something wrong. Okay. To do it when they do something right.
Okay.
When doing something right, you explain to them, there's din v'cheshbon. You know you're gonna, that Hashem remembers everything. He's going to reward you for this. And there's also bad, you say the other side of the coin also. It's all about the timing, about when you say it. Yeah.
You said you cannot have a all the time. So what do you have when you're not having the Abba?
Well, the general reverence and respect for the relationship.
So
you know that weird of it.
Kabbalah Soh Machu Shemaim.
So isn't that having a hub?
No, it's a general respect and reverence for the relationship, for the king. Well, let's say it's in a relationship between two people. I don't feel love right now, but I know I have. I respect the fact that there is a relationship here, and I know I have to be careful to guard it, even though I'm not feeling love right now.
I guess I'm not really.
I just want to say before. I just want to say before. I know you guys have to leave. People want to leave. I know it's overtime. I just really want to thank everyone for coming tonight. Honestly. It's like I was, I thought it would be like, and no one would venture out in this cold weather. So, gracias, Shakayach, Mamish, thank you very much.
Only warm.
Your watch. Don't forget your watch.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, you're very welcome.
Get my hands around how you're defining Ava.
Ava is to Mamish feel love, to feel love in an open way.
How do you feel love? What is that love? Because to me, reverence and awe, that's part of it.
It's a parameter to be able to facilitate the love, but the actual love is a feeling of love. A feeling of wanting to be close to the person, a feeling of dvekus, a feeling of not wanting to ever be apart from this person, a feeling of you feel God and you want always to be, you want to be closer and closer. That's what Ava is, a propelling towards something. It's a dvekus, it's a connection. I don't want to ever stop being far close to you. It's a feeling of love.
I'm really confused. I don't know. Am I the only one that's confused?
Yeah, I don't know. How can you be in a state of love when you're busy, when you're...